From the editors at Paranormal Underground and Ghost Knight Publishing, welcome to Paranormal Underground Presents, where you can explore the unexplained with our panel and special guests.
Hey everybody, welcome. This is going to be a really interesting one. We're talking about something called the Dybbuk Box. You're probably asking yourselves right now, what is she talking about? What's a Dybbuk Box? Well, it seems to be a haunted wine cabinet, or at least a wine cabinet that is surrounded by some very interesting paranormal activity. If you want to see the full story of the Dybbuk Box, you can either read our May issue of the magazine, or you can go to the Dybbuk Box website, and that website is www.dybbuk, that's dibbukbox.com. All right, let's go ahead and get started. It's Karen, Chad, JD, and Cheryl with you. We have a really interesting story. I was cruising forums, as I do, and I came across a story about something called a Dybbuk Box. That's not how it's pronounced, is it, JD?
It can be pronounced. I know he pronounces it that way, but the Eastern European pronunciation would be Dybbuk.
Okay. Well, I came across a story about something called a Dybbuk Box, and I was immediately captivated by this story, and I actually contacted JD, who was also pretty much immediately captivated by the story. The story is of a haunted box, and it was sold on eBay. It contains supposedly a spirit called a Dybbuk. Now, what is your definition of a Dybbuk, JD?
A Dybbuk, according, is a Kabbalistic spirit. It's related to Jewish mysticism, and under their description, it's a spirit of a sinner who has returned. In the Talmud, which is part of the Kabbalistic practice, there is a belief in reincarnation. A sinner or an evil spirit that returns to accomplish a task. It will attach itself to the body of a living being, speak and move through that person until the task is completed, and then it can rest.
Okay. If you want to read the story of the Dybbuk Box for yourself, it's a really fascinating read. You can find it on the Dybbuk Box website. It's www.dibbukbox.com. So you can read the story there. You can also read it in our May issue of the magazine. I was really captivated by this story. As a matter of fact, I think all four of us were as we started to read it. And so I'm really looking forward to talking to Jason, who's the owner. Just briefly, some of the things that were in the story. It was originally sold on eBay by this guy who got it from a family at an auction, and the family freaked out when he offered to give it back to him and said, no, it's yours now, we don't want it. He took it home and all sorts of misfortune fell upon his household. Am I getting it right so far, guys?
Pretty much, yeah.
I'd say so.
Okay, yeah. And so after a period of time, this guy, after his business was in ruins and his mother had had a stroke and all sorts of things, he sold it on eBay because he was hoping that he would find someone who would take it, who had an understanding of the paranormal things that were surrounding it. So he sold it on eBay to a college student in Missouri. And the college student in Missouri took it home. He was pretty much an agnostic, didn't really believe that anything was happening. And when he took it home, strange things started to happen also in his home. And he had something like six roommates, I think. And strange things started to happen there, too. So he didn't really go into detail about the things that happened. But when his hair started falling out, he decided that he didn't want this box in his home either. That's when it came to be with the current owner, whose name is Jason. And he's a curator in a museum in Missouri. And he bought the box as an artifact, I believe. Now, JD's talked to Jason. He was looking at it more in a scientific way as an artifact. Is that right?
That's correct. He his main purpose, so he told me, was to find out why the box was created. What was the purpose of the box? Who created it and why? Which is very understandable. I'd be wanting to know those answers to those questions myself.
Sure. Jason has had this box for quite a while, and apparently there's a movie being made about the box and all sorts of things. Now, I asked Jason about the original owners of the box, and I found this really interesting. He said when the family was originally forthcoming about what this box was and what it did. And then what happened is when there became this worldwide attention focused on the box, they sort of went to ground. And the last statement they made, and I don't have it right here in front of me, but it was something along the lines of, the Dybbuk box has been released upon the world. I don't remember the rest of it, but it's fairly ominous. We're going to be talking to Jason here in a few minutes, and one of the things that Jason told me is that we can expect to have technical difficulties, that he's never, ever given an interview before where there haven't been technical difficulties if it's been a podcast or radio show. What do you guys think?
We'll see.
We'll have to wait and see how it works out.
Do we need to pray?
Well, I asked him that. I asked him about protection. And he said that nobody had ever asked him that before. So I look at it as sort of a psychic condom. You might as well use it, right? So he suggested, what did he say we needed to say, JD? What's it called?
A Shema.
He said we needed to say a Shema. So you know the English version of the Shema, right?
Yeah, I do.
It's Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4 through 9.
Okay, well, why don't you go ahead and do it for us and our listeners.
All right. The Shema is actually part of the morning and evening prayer service also within the Jewish faith, part of the Torah. As Chad mentioned, only one verse from Deuteronomy 6:4, and it also corresponds with the Talmud. Oh, hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. And that is the first part. There are several other smaller verses that go with it, and they come from different verses, but this would be comparable to the Christian's Hail Mary, that type of thing. It's known as a Paternoster or protection prayer.
I will be interested to see how this goes. So if we have technical difficulties, guys, you know why. Maybe that's what our technical difficulties were with our podcast with Shannon, is it was the Dybbuk box getting us in advance. Cheryl and I all week, whenever we've been talking about the Dybbuk box and something weird has happened, what have we been, what have we been saying, Cheryl?
Well, I think we say don't mock the box.
Don't mock
the box. Yeah, there you go.
All right.
There you go.
So our guest tonight is Jason, and Jason is a curator for a museum in Missouri, and he's the current owner of the Dybbuk box. Hi, Jason. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me tonight.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Well, you know the format. We explained it to you before. The first person who's going to be asking you questions is Cheryl Knight. So go ahead, Cheryl.
Thanks, Karen. Hi, Jason. I also wanted to thank you for taking the time to talk to us tonight. I know that what we're about to talk about is a little bit mysterious, but pretty exciting. And I believe that you have about 25 years of experience studying American antiques and ancient artifacts. Is that correct?
That's correct. I was brought up, my mother was an art teacher in high school, so was around a lot of historical pieces growing up and kind of got used to those in my life. Kind of went that route for a degree in commercial art initially, went to education, humanities, and so I travel a good bit. Love to research ancient art, artifacts, because they're our whole history of who we are as a people.
Okay, great. Now, Karen talked a little bit about how you came upon the Dybbuk box and that your main purpose is to do research on it in regard to who created it and the purpose of the box. Can you tell us in your research to date if you have found those answers as to who created the box and why they created it?
I think having had the box now since February of 2004, so really pretty much 5 years, have had a chance to really figure out at least the context of the Jewish faith and mysticism, that certainly this was made by someone with a Jewish background. And as a result, I feel that that answer is that somebody was looking for answers and using the box as a means to reach a spiritual world and bring those answers in. In the process, I think a few people have owned the box out of curiosity or by accident, but for whatever reason, they ended up with it. It didn't do them any good, and so they, of course, got rid of it. I think my getting the box gave it kind of an opportunity for a break and for me to just take time and really study, first of all, the artifact itself and the pieces and the context of how something could be used before really looking to what would be the spiritual nature.
Okay, great. Who created the box? Do you have any guesses on who created the box?
I believe that it was created by, from the story itself, would be a 103-year-old woman named Havilah. I get the feeling that it probably was an older Jewish person, possibly female. I think that it is indeed a family piece. I think it's something that was created and kind of like a family secret. And I think that's what's made it so difficult to get to the truth, because most rabbis and people who see it don't doubt that is Jewish and that it has a purpose, though it is not completely typical. Jewish magic, mysticism is not something that is kind of condoned and encouraged, but it goes on every day. And so for that reason, it's kind of like a little secret. And so it's believed that there is the ability to do magic. And so obviously people think, well, if I can do it, then I want to get involved. But out in the public, it's not really accepted that you're doing that. And as we've discovered more recently, some of the Book of Mysteries and writings, there's a 2,000-year history of rituals and processes to bring things your way or take care of problems in your life. And I think that's what this box was about. It's a family piece that was set on a mission, so to speak, to bring answers.
Okay. Now, there's two previous owners that obtained the box, I believe, one got them from the family, from an estate sale, I believe. Is that correct? And then the second one got it off eBay.
Right. The first person bought it kind of as not looking for anything mystical, was looking for something of decorative quality. And the box having the grape appliques, which typically for Jewish people would be a sense of freedom, having to made grapes and wine for many centuries for other people, now had the chance to make their own wine with the freedom. So there's a lot of symbolism. So it's a very attractive, very rare woods, beautiful brass adornments. So as a collector myself of antiques for the house, it would be a very attractive little piece. And so it was bought really as a decorative item. But when opened, because it had a little lock on the top, all these odd pieces, hair, strange octopus-footed candles, strange stones that are put together almost like a small altar, pennies. These things were seen as kind of odd and kind of just pulled out of it and put to the side, not realizing that this was a kind of a unit.
Got it. Now, those two owners had some strange occurrences happen, and some called them paranormal occurrences or magical occurrences, and many of them were deemed negative occurrences. Since you've had the Dybbuk box, what types of strange, paranormal, magical, or unexpected occurrences have taken place?
Well, the things that I've had problems with, one consistent with all owners is damage, physical damage, and in particular to the eyes, almost like slow blindness. And I've always had very good vision, and it occurred almost immediately with me upon having the box, have both my eyes look like they've been severely, when you say poked, you know, it's one thing to get your eyes poked, but it's another thing to have them so poked that they are absolutely bloodshot and bleeding inside. And obviously it sets people back because they think, gosh, you've got pink eye. And of course, when I woke up, I thought, okay, whatever happened to me will clear up before too long. But after almost 3 weeks of this condition that was not healing, I went to see optometrists, and two different ones basically said that I just had a sudden drying of my eyes. If there's nothing they can do to repair it, that they could give me solutions that will take the blood out and the redness out, but it would not heal the eyes, that is something that they might have to do on their own if they ever do that. And the good thing is, in more recent years, after almost, like I said, three and a half years of having my vision get worse and worse, suddenly it's on the heel and getting better. And part of that is with containing what I consider the Dybbuk box. For whatever reason, my vision has gotten stronger and stronger, to the point of going from needing glasses not to needing them anymore.
Wow. Now, you just referred to containing the Dybbuk box. I understand that you currently keep the box in a wooden acacia ark that's lined in 24-karat gold to mute its effects. Can you explain what effects are muted and how this ark mutes them?
Well, the suggestion was Daniel Krutt was a Kabbalah student that's been kind of involved with me and helpful, actually, in my learning Hebrew and kind of uncovering the mysteries of the spiritual world from a Kabbalah sense. Basically, the guidance was that the slow-growing acacia wood of the Middle East, it has been used for the temples of Solomon. It's been used for the Ark of the Covenant. And so that this is a wood that is equated as a rare wood, a religious wood. Perhaps the sappiness and the slow growing of it is what creates it almost like a lead container.
Okay.
The wood itself is less porous than a majority of woods that you would find. And so perhaps that is why this wood is always chosen, because of its nature. Mm-hmm. Plus, it also has a magical quality in that the flower of the acacia, the yellow blooms, there's an aroma that mm-hmm. is very pleasing. And so it is seen as, again, kind of an unusual material from a spiritual sense. The gold itself, of course, a rare metal that can do a lot to contain different energies and promote energies. And so from a scientific perspective, I often have some paranormal people that really look at this from a science perspective. They said if you were deadening residual energy from a spirit or any type mm-hmm. of energy that might be in it, this would be the best way to contain it. Okay. A good solid wood with another, with the gold that will, they think, diffuse the energy. And so since using that, some things that had happened to me, that choking, it was a constant fluid collection that would then drop to my lungs, and literally it would be as if drowning. And this was this went on for years until the box was created, and then putting it inside, and then it's cleared up, and I've never had the problem since.
Okay.
Things like tiredness, not being able to sleep, not realizing perhaps that being awake most mm-hmm. of the night, and so there was just a wearing down, a sudden weight increase. It didn't matter. I didn't really eat necessarily more, but weight kept seeming to attract to the body, and even some strange mucus type things. Now, maybe they call it ectoplasm or whatever, but there were these strange times of a material coming out of me that was almost just a clear mucusy stuff. Again, not mm-hmm. necessarily related to the choking. It wasn't like it was phlegm, but mm-hmm. again, these strange things that went on for years, and they call that, I guess, demonic oppression, stopped once the box seemed to have been contained. And so I feel very good about it. Now, that being said, today I actually had to, and I rarely actually get the box out.
Okay.
But we were making an exact copy, and in that I had to pull off one of the hinges, because it is a very rare and unusual hinge that had to be specially manufactured for a copy.
Okay.
So I had to put back the hinge. And so, of course, it's been sitting in the box contained minus its hinge. And so today I put the hinge back on, and sure enough, my eyes have been just a mess since that time period. And hopefully things will be better later on, but that's mm-hmm. just one of those strange things about it. And we've checked it. It's not like there's ammonia or some chemical, because that's one of my first instincts.
My next question,
It's like, what, you know, is there something that you touch and then you touch your eyes that causes this? But we've swabbed it. We've checked it. There's nothing. There's really nothing on it. It's just wood with a little bit of a wax. But even the wax shouldn't be causing that, you know, kind of beeswax.
Okay. I've read that many of the owners or people who come in contact with a box have very disturbing dreams or some type of prophetic dreams. Have you experienced that at all?
I have. And that is, I know later on some of the questions will be, do you think it's really a Dybbuk? And of course, with the Hebrew, things are pronounced many, many different ways. But I just usually use the word Dybbuk because that's how it's always been presented to me. But basically, that is something that has been consistent with the box, even from the beginning, was a series of prophetic dreams that dealt with the box itself, almost as if it was giving the answers to the future. Things that didn't make sense in the dreams that I jot down in a journal, only then to find out months later where the connection was. Almost as if it was leading you on a path to find some answers.
So, in your opinion, do you believe that the box contains magical or any type of paranormal powers?
I think so. I mean, if you read the book called Dybbuk by Gershon Winkler, he basically says, I mean, to believe it can create it. And I guess there's enough people that believe in the power of this item. And even to myself, the belief of the spiritual world itself, that I think this has some type of a power and some type of a mission that it's on. And I think part of that 5 years and some of its guidance have helped me figure out what that mission is, what might be called a segula, which is if you've done no wrong and you've been wronged, can you find the answer? What you have a right through spiritual guidance to to have your question of why answered, or even revenge to some degree. If you've done nothing wrong and someone has harmed you without any reason, you have the right to ask for revenge on that case. And so I believe there's a combination of things going on with this item, or I usually call it an artifact.
Okay. Now, my last question is surrounding the movie and documentary. Can you talk just a little bit about the Hollywood movie and documentary that's being made about the box, and if you have any type of involvement in those two projects?
Really, for the most part, yes. There is actually, you know, of course, a lot of people say, aha, here's the rationale. You wanted to make a movie. That's why you did all this. And it's like, well, no, you'll find no relationship to me and the first owner or the second owner. As a matter of fact, mm-hmm. I've never even seen the second owner face to face. We've had a few emails, and he's kind of gone off on his own tangent. The first owner, it took me almost 6 months to track the person down, and even then was reluctant to have anything to do with me or the box ever again. And I've slowly worked the trust back up, but it appears that in that meeting with him and bringing this out, things have only gotten worse in his life. So his first judgment on the fact to stay clear, probably should have stuck to that, because I do think that things have gotten worse mm-hmm. in his and his mother's life again, just when they thought that they were free from it. But the issue of the movie itself, but what I'm saying is, I only put up a website, and if you go to DivicBox.com, the website, there really is nothing that I gain from that. My name is not on it. People have figured out who I am and have contacted me. But what I'm saying, for the most part, that was because so many people wanted to know about this artifact who had also been following it through the internet that right. I couldn't answer thousands of letters. And some people were truly nuts, I think. And some people I really respected. Daughters of Kabbalah priests who were in their own ways looking for answers and were familiar with this stuff. Physicist, a female physicist, was really the type of person that you think has a grasp on the physical world and how things work, wanting to know more. And so there were so mm-hmm. many people out there with their own questions. I set up the website. It never occurred to me that someone through Hollywood, and especially a significant producer and director, would find this website and go through all the trouble to locate me. And even then, it was like, you know, I'll be honest, I didn't want to do a movie. Mm-hmm. This was really my own research, and I live a pretty good life. I don't need this. And I was really given the choice of, through the lawyer, well, you can work with us, and we'll have some input, or you cannot, and we're going to do it anyway.
Okay.
And it is basically because you don't have the means to sue us or cause us any grief. And sorry to say it, but that's about how it really works, I guess, in California. So that brought that on. Now, the documentary is something which is telling the true story that I have the rights to do, and which I prefer to do, because the movie itself will be taking the ideas but creating a fictional story. The documentary will be telling all the truth with interviews of everybody involved. And it does appear that thing's on a fast track now. I found a director, a friend of the family, that ironically has the skill to pull this together and is going to do it. So it will be available in a documentary for those that want the whole story, more than you can get in a 40-minute interview.
And when will the documentary and movie be released?
The movie they're working on right now, they actually, kind of the Divic problem is, they've had three people write the screenplay, and it's never been good enough for the actual story. So that's what they're saying, is no one can write the material as good as what the story actually is. And so it kind of has them, that's why they've never gone 5 years to create a film. But they think they're very close. The documentary, I've only started that since December. And my hunch is that it could be ready probably within a year.
Okay, great. Well, I'd like to thank you for talking to me today, and I'm going to go ahead and pass you on to Paranormal Underground's publisher, and that's Chad Wilson.
Hey, Chad.
How you doing? What is your definition of a Divic?
Well, again, not necessarily being Jewish myself. I come from a Methodist background.
Yes.
I did very early on by reading different works. I certainly would recommend, I'm just saying, for some people, and I'll give my definition, but if you want to know where my definition comes from, part of it is from reading and trying to understand from rabbis. But I would say Joshua Trachtenberg wrote a book in 1939 called Jewish Magic and Superstition. It is probably the best book of 2,000 years. It doesn't judge it yes or no. It just tells you what has been written, what has been going on for 2,000 years in the Jewish faith. And though it says magic and superstition, it really is a play-by-play of what the Jewish faith has been about according to the spiritual world and the unknown. And so, Winkler, Rabbi Winkler's book, The Dybbuk. But basically, you know, I'm told it's a cleaving or holding fast spirit. It's a disembodied. Now, could that be a demon? All it really means is the spirit could be a person who has been evil in their life and has not been accepted into the path of redemption and purification and therefore is set to wander. But my thought is that there could be energies, and these energies can be produced by people creating evil thoughts. It's almost like you can give birth to an evilness that actually can have a physical process. And there's that belief. But I'm saying my thought is that there could be some type of a spirit. That's what the Dybbuk could be, demon or person that has something to fulfill and therefore attaches. And it may actually, you know, the word is, you know, could it, that if it attaches to a person, why would it be attached in the box itself?
Okay.
And that's the process of a demon. It can lay in waiting anywhere, or a spirit, I should say, not necessarily a demon, but it's the same idea that once they've had their opportunity, and this family created the opportunity, they asked for it, and that is part of the requirement, that once they created that opportunity, it lays in wait.
Okay.
Wherever it is easiest to get a hold of them. And if that is in a container, then so be it.
So you think it's something associated with the family?
I really do. Some type of a family. And it's the dark secrets. It has to do with the family that was inviting the spiritual world in and knew very well what they were trying to do, whether they were trying to do it to gain power.
Okay.
That's typically what people are looking for. I'll be honest, I don't dabble in this type of stuff because I'm very content. But there are people that would love to have this box to do things, put wine in the cup, to light the candle, to open it and use the rare granites to pray to. I've never had an interest in doing any of that.
Well, I've seen on the website where it mentioned where it was thought there might be two actual Dybbuks in the box. Do you believe that?
Well, again, from some of the readings, that actually in any possession, there are two spirits at work. One to kind of open the door and one to actually then possess the person. That's the general take. But I think people thought there were two spirits because of the way the story was told from the person that bought it from the estate. He was told that there is a Dybbuk and a Kesselim. And what I think was misunderstood is that Kesselim, which is what they described one spirit, could be the word Kessem, K-E-S-S-E-M.
Okay.
Very similar. So, and when you hear things from people, especially when you're not familiar with what they're talking about. But Kessem is actually predicting, fortune-telling, using familial tokens.
Okay.
In Jewish mysticism, which is kishuf. So if you use kishuf, it's Jewish magic and it is forbidden, but you use kesem to predict. And so you do use maybe hair or coins or stones or bones. Okay. But that's why I believe that in the actual storytelling, there really is supposedly a spirit and the material to draw the spirit. Also maybe for possession, if a spirit thinks it can own something,
okay.
More likely to stay trapped, so to speak, because it thinks these are its things, therefore it stays with its things.
Okay. Through your research, have you determined who the spirit of the Dybbuk might be?
I'm not. I mean, there's several options. I mean, what I'm saying is when you kind of think about it, if there is a spirit that for some reason needs to finish its life, because there's two ways this can happen. A spirit could actually go to kind of start the process of repairing and healing, and it's not ready, and it's basically shut out. So it now has to wander, and therefore it's going to look for some safety. Could the family have created the box to provide a safe haven for someone they felt in their family was not completely healed, not ready? So it could have actually been a safe haven. Again, without visiting with the person who created it, who's now dead.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure that whoever created it is since gone. They're wanting it to be buried with them, I think, goes on to show you, they wanted to continue to protect that their spirit might merge with this safe haven and somehow create a passage. But that is one way. And once something has been denied access to the beginning of heaven, again, the Jewish faith is a little different. It's not heaven, mm-hmm. we think of it, but it's moving towards perfection, which is okay. on the granite rock, shalom, peace, is a perfection. It's not a peace that we will find in this world. And so this all entails perfection. And so perhaps a spirit, which could be, I think, a Gilgul, is somehow it's described, is in the process of repairing itself.
Okay.
It's got three attempts. And if it can't figure it out in three attempts, supposedly it's destined to wander forever. Okay. But even in its wandering, there's always an opportunity for redemption. There is always an opportunity to repair. Could it be, someone from the actual Poland that caused the harm? You know, I guess that's the other thing, too, is to think that everybody wants justice and wants everybody to suffer. Sometimes if we just want the answer, if you realize that the person causing the pain may have been in pain themselves. I worked as a juvenile officer for a year, and children that were abused, you usually didn't have to look far, because if you saw their parents, you realized where, you know, their parents didn't have a lot going on. But then you also have to look at the parents' story. And so it's a perpetuating story of abuse. And their story might be as horrible as the story they put on their own children. And so this need to repair, sometimes you don't like what you see, but it's just as hard to be angry at the person perpetuating the problem, because maybe their story is just as sad and tragic. So I have no idea what the spirit could be.
Yeah.
Many, many options.
What about the contents of the box? What do you think they represent?
I certainly feel that gems have always been used in Jewish mysticism, and the granite piece that says Shalom on it, those are four rare granites that are not found in the United States, and just purchasing that material would cost about $300. Scraps of that material would cost you about $300. So this was certainly put together with a lot of thought. The other thing about that stone, just offhand, it's been chiseled. Now, I certainly tried in my replication, because you can learn a lot about an artifact by recreating it.
Okay.
One thing I learned is that every time you try to chisel that type of stone, you break it, you destroy it. It takes a very skilled person with very good tools. Ultimately, I was only able to reproduce it by using a diamond-tipped drill bit.
Wow.
And yet, the mark that it makes is not the same as true carving on stone. It truly is an art that is not possessed by very many people. So I know that took a lot of energy. The other thing is the stone itself is actually out of balance. So there's constantly a kinetic energy. So if you had to wonder if there's something that would charge or keep a spirit alive or keep it drawn there, there actually is a kinetic force of weight. Because when I recreated it, it was almost impossible to put the stone together because it kept wanting to fall over.
Okay.
It took a lot of effort. But once I did that, I realized that there is a constant gravitational pull to that weight, which creates an energy. Maybe it's at the molecular level, but it's there. And if you believe in string theory and all of this spiritual stuff is related to molecular processes and vibrations anyway, then it all makes sense that, well, that would be the logical path anyway for a spirit, would be at the smallest level. So, and then there's the hair. Hair has been donated as a token, as a gift to the spiritual world for 1,000 years. We've only changed that more recently as the braided hair has become braided bread. And so when we now offer bread in the service, we actually are referring back to what was at one time hair. Copper coins, again, money, a value, we put an energy into it. And then the nature of copper, it's usually used for purification in an altar. The candle, obviously, the flame connects the worlds, the spiritual world, mm-hmm. our world, the burning and that energy. And then the actual cup, you can actually pray and do incantation over liquid and give an opportunity for energy to fall into the cup and then drink it, to bring it within you, which is why when we toast, and today at my Easter dinner, the family had a glass of wine and we all toasted, and of course all the glass rang, but basically that is the sharp sound, the abusive act of hitting glasses actually throws the spirits out, so that you can then drink in safety.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So that's some of the items. I'm just telling you some story of what would be involved with this. But those are just some of the items, including the box itself, which is a rare wood, which is very important to the process.
Well, I've read of at least two instances in the Bible of a Dybbuk taking possession of somebody. And the one of them was in the book of Samuel and one of them was in the book of Kings.
Okay.
Now, in your studies, have you come across any other instances of possession by a Dybbuk?
Well, yeah, actually, of course, what you're talking about, I think, is King Saul became jealous of King David, and God supposedly gave permission for a Dybbuk, a spirit, to take him over, and he became raving crazy. In the same story, we see David always at peace and always well-liked, but he had the power of the harp. And the harp, again, the string, the sound, the vibrations, always have to look at that. Could have been a form of exorcism, an ability of that. We also look at King Solomon, supposedly also claimed that he had the ability to exorcise spirits from people. Keep in mind, in an exorcism, you're not just throwing them out and to heck with them, but actually, usually you're helping them fulfill what's missing. And it often requires care and a Kaddish, which is actually a prayer for them to help them be released. But probably more recently, if you wanted to know what has been a primary source and fairly authenticated, would be that there was in Winkler's book, The Dybbuk, a 1909 exorcism by Rabbi Chofetz Chaim. And this was in 1909, but there was, this has photographs, it has the whole story. A young woman was possessed. It was certainly a Dybbuk, because in a true possession by a Dybbuk, things happen that normally would not happen. There are unique signs. One would be the high-pitched voice, but it comes without the person's lips or mouth moving. Okay. And usually you think of it as sounding almost like a young boy. And they're able to report on past events that this person would have had no connection to. They're typically, the person will begin having dreams that will let them talk of the future or know of things again of the past. And the other thing is, with my weight gain, typically a bulge. There actually has to be a physical manifestation in this world. And they say that it's almost like a small glowing ball. I mean, you can think of it almost tumor-like. But there could often in a possession be some type of a bulge for that entity to actually be physically, though it's mostly spiritual, there has to be a physical element in this world. And so those are kind of the four things that you would look for. And I would say that even within myself, some of the things that have affected me follow some of those, except for the strange little voice. But basically, some of those strange things have actually occurred with me in dealing with this box until it was contained. And I have to say, for the most part, those things have been, I think, kind of taken care of. So I would recommend that if you wanted to find out more of that case. And again, mostly it was praying. And every year for the next 23 years, a prayer was given for this spirit in order to keep it from coming back. Okay?
Have you ever thought about having an exorcism performed, a Jewish exorcism?
I really did. I think they call it a minyan, where you bring 10 men of Jewish faith together. Shofar
The horn is called a shofar.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is there's a process, because that is, again, the piercing, the striking, the startling, tefillah, you know, wearing the word of God on your body itself. But what I'm saying is I thought of that, but I'm saying in more recent times I've decided against that. In the fact of going the Kabbalah route is more to contain whatever it is. Feeling right now that there isn't a need to go that route. But I certainly considered it in my when my health was at its worst, probably about 2 years ago, before I got on this path. It took almost a year to create the actual container, the ark that holds it now, because it is a slow process. It's a very detailed one. As always, if you deal with Jewish mysticism and read the Sefer HaRazam, you can do magical things through the Jewish faith, but it's never easy. Some things take up to 7 years of getting the materials ready. And in this case, in order to create a container, I had to find a 50-year-old acacia tree. That would be impossible, because even if you found one, who's going to let you cut it down? But this is where the spiritual world will, if you want something, it'll work. The acacia tree I used actually was in Florida, and it was planted after World War II as a sign of freedom and growth. However, as Francis was the hurricane that came through, took down this tree after almost 50 years of growth. And so the tree was destroyed by nature and therefore made available. Keep in mind, it's a tree that doesn't even grow in the United States, so it's kind of freakish. It ended up here.
Wow.
Person gathered up all the lumber for logs, took one tree, cut it into boards, and I was able to get it. So that's kind of where I received my stuff. The gold came from Thailand, which is in crisis right now. But what I'm saying is, at the time, their ability to process gold and sell it at nothing. When I bought it, the gold market was nothing. So I probably bought what would be today about $8,000 worth of gold.
Wow.
About $300. And so it's completely lined, but at an expense that I couldn't do today.
Yeah.
So all this is kind of, it all fell together. But again, because of these things being created, I feel better about it.
Okay. I guess that'll be all my questions for today. You've told me a lot, and I appreciate it. And I'm going to turn you over to JD now.
Hi, Jason. How you doing? Good talking with you again.
Okay, JD. Yeah, we had a chance earlier to visit, and looking forward to visit with you more.
Okay. Yeah, me too. You've seen my questions, and basically these questions are a lot of the things we discussed, and I think our listeners would probably be very interested in some. I know they were interesting points. My first question for you is, in the description of the Dybbuk box given by the original seller on eBay, there are several noted discrepancies that have come to light regarding the age and origin of the box. Have these discrepancies changed your ideas about the box? And if so, why?
To some degree, not. I mean, one of the things, the box is an older box. The materials are certainly older. The candlestick is from about 1890 to 1900. The actual cup that's within it is probably from the early 1960s, the gold cup. The stones themselves could have been put together anytime in the 60s. As I've looked at, in the actual container, the box itself is a product probably of about 1964, 65. Though people so often misunderstood that when the family tried to capture this spirit, they something went wrong, and to some degree they ended up in concentration camps. Now, escaping them, as you and I know, was almost impossible. But
right.
But there were some issues of it happening, or in different ways it happening. Mm-hmm. Escaping to Spain, maybe it was safer. We certainly know that Patton was, by 1942-ish, was already, 43 into Africa and freeing that area. And so it was an area that might have been under more disruption, and more things could have happened. But I believe the discrepancies that I see normally point to the family that actually created the box, but the first seller, because there's a lot of coincidences that in following up him, because it wasn't enough just to get the box and look into other things, but it was following up this person's story. But in all honesty, this person did have a Jewish grandmother that lived to be 103 in perfect health, and she actually practiced mysticism. This was found out through a sister who has really no connection to it. It's a half-brother, but basically no connection. But as I was looking at some of the information that she provided, it reaffirmed that, just as someone might say, well, yeah, I've got a friend who has this nasty illness, and talking to a doctor, it's like, oh, yeah, tell me about your friend. In this case, it makes me believe that I think some of the story is twisted to throw a red herring in. But there is no doubt in my mind that this is of Jewish nature and Jewish power. And even the prayer, things were done in a way that are so subtle that only someone really steeped in Jewish understanding could have created this, that I myself could not have probably put this together in a way that wouldn't be scream out falseness. And so I do believe that there are red herrings there in the actual object. But not so much in some of the material and how it's put together.
Right, right. Okay. Thank you for that explanation. That was, I'm sure, like I said, the listeners will be glad to hear that, because they probably had similar questions. My second question is in Kabbalistic practice, the Dibyuk is described as a spirit of a sinner or an evil person that attaches itself to a person in order to accomplish a specific task. Now, I know you touched on this on an earlier question, but I'd like you to elaborate on it, because in my research, I could find no instance of a Dibyuk being attached to an inanimate object. Now, that doesn't mean that it's wrong. It's just my research, I could not find it. Have you come across any research that can explain this?
Well, and we talked a little bit, earlier about, a lot of the Dybbuk research began in the 1600s. And
right.
In the, what is, I think, the Ma'asha book, which is a 1602 book on Dybbuks, and it's a rabbi, basically a rabbi created this mysticism. The spirits can actually enter into animals or humans, which is kind of, again, as you say, it's not an inanimate object. But in Trachtenberg, as I mentioned, and it is an excellent resource for people, demons will stay posted and wait for the opportunity. And we do see, even in times of early colonial times, that families that messed with the spiritual world, really, even if they even moved away from wherever their homes were and stuff, they continued to be attacked, slapped, beaten. Things that were used initially put on for fun actually became horribly abusive, and no way of them ever getting rid or freedom that. There is also the Gilgul can reincarnate in a rock. Now, I don't understand why, but that is part of in Jewish mysticism, would be an example of an inanimate object for reincarnation you may require to come back in the form of a rock to gain the knowledge to finally get into heaven. As well as also people and such. So those are some, just a few more areas that I've looked into. You know.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks. My next question. The pupils of Isaac Luria, a 16th century Jewish mystic and founder of a school of Kabbalah, describe ceremonies for the exorcism of such Dibyuks, and in many writings they give detailed instructions about how to chase away common ones. Have you looked at these writings, and if so, what have you found out?
Well, I have a little bit, and in some of my readings, one of the things that I looked at, that there are specific egresses, basically, for the spirit to leave. For instance, the eyes, which is why the bleeding of the eyes and the damage to the eyes, that is actually part of the process of in going to sleep at night or in the dreams, the spirit enters in and out of your body and through your mind, but there is a need for it to come into you, and that one of the ways it comes in is through the eyes, through the mouth. And then particularly what's odd for some of these writings is that the way that a spirit must leave would be specific down to that it has to be the right foot, the little toe, and that in the process of an exorcism, there will be an opening made in the room, such as a glass pane will receive a hole through it, almost, I guess, what I think would be like a BB hole. Now, again, going back to a little bit what we talked about earlier about can you contain a spirit in a box, there are, within this information, saying that you can, by building, do things that spirits can lay claim to a area, and that you're building a home. If you make it look permanent, that's when things will start happening. That's when the construction crew will start dying and things, because they, and water will probably erupt from wherever, because they don't want a permanent dwelling. They don't mind in their time period for things that look temporary to come up in their path. But it does go back to that windows, doors, things you can block a spirit into an area. Part of this, I think, with these tokens was to draw a spirit to the area, but then seal it shut. And of course we think, well, wait a minute, it's a spirit. Why can't it get away? I can give an explanation somewhat of that might help, an analogy, but that if it believes it's contained, then it's trapped. And they often do this with monkeys in different countries, is that you will find an area of monkeys. If you want to catch a monkey, you basically bore a hole in a tree that's the size of the hand, and then you drop things in, such as nuts or things that the monkey will want, and that basically they can reach in and grab them. But if you startle them, they will try to get their hand out. Unless they release what's in their hand, they can't get out. And they won't let go of what's in their hand. And in essence, the monkey will scream and shout, but will be caught only because it refuses to release the objects that it's acquired. to some degree, that's the analogy with the spirit. You have given these items. They want to possess something physical, something of our work. So it stays put because these are its items. And that until those items are gone, you know, that's part of the idea of containing a spirit and keeping it in a spot.
All right. Well, thank you. That's all I have for you. It's a pleasure talking to you, and I really appreciate you coming by. And I believe Karen might have a few things for you. Karen?
Yeah, Jason, you've been really generous with your time. Do you have time for just one more question that I
sure.
have?
Sure, Karen.
What are you going to do with the box?
Well, that's a good question. You know, oddly enough, my family's grown up with it over 5 years. My son has had certainly a lot of things happen to him. My daughter's had things happen, but it's more in her dream stories that she tells me that I'm aware of it. I don't usually do anything to cause her distress. She's a lot younger. By younger, she's 14. My son's 18. I've asked my family to say that I would like perhaps this box to be buried with me. Just what if? And basically, no, that's been refused. So you can see how you would think, well, wait a minute, why? What's the problem here? And it's like, you know, it wasn't buried the first time. And for all their different reasons, my son says that he would like to have it the rest of his life. And it's like, well, you know, what if I don't want you to have it the rest of your life? But and my wife is like, I don't know. I'm going to cremate you, so I'm not going to necessarily have a burial anyway. So it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, again, you lose a lot of control when you die. And so it's not surprising that Havilah had this plan that she thought was foolproof, only to discover that the rabbi and her family came across a new plan and basically released this item. So one of my thoughts was, I thought of having it buried with me. If I want that to happen, I'll have to bury it first. And I know a lot of people think, whoa, 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 why would you do such a thing? You need to release this material. But to some degree, what I've discovered on the spirituality and the items in this box, you could create your own Dybbuk box if that's what you would like. Why would you need this one? And I find that the people who want it the most scare me the most. That people who are curious but want to retain a distance, I have a lot of respect for that. They don't want it. Many people don't want the Dybbuk box. They want to know more about it, but that's enough to satisfy their curiosity. The people that truly want it, to some degree, do scare me. And I have several options. One would, though, be to ultimately bury it and put it to rest and let the earth, and this is what happens with Jewish mysticism. Once you empower an amulet or something, once these things are collected, when they're done, when they've done what they're supposed to do, you bury them in the ground, and basically the earth itself will slowly pull away the power and energy of the item and make it nothing in a matter of years. And so that might be the ultimate goal that I would have with it. But I would try to make sure that as much is told about it in advance before that would be done.
Okay, well, thank you. Before we let you go, do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, certainly I'd like to let people know that I came off getting the box really from a skeptic's point of view. My whole thought of getting it was to debunk it, to debunk the Dybbuk. But as I started looking into a faith I didn't know about, I'm Methodist, but looking at the Jewish faith and learning Hebrew language and finding out the amazing connection of science and what the Jewish faith and people have been practicing for thousands of years, it really has grown my spiritual self. And that is something I'm kind of thankful for, that there is, I think, a lot to learn in the process of working with an artifact like this, with a history, with a story, with a mystery to it. I would say that I will provide the material in the documentary and on my website. I don't care to be contacted again. This is something I deal with when I have a time, but I have a family. I have a job. It has nothing to do with this. This isn't my life, but it is something that has been certainly something I've put a lot of time in out of my own curiosity. And so I do ask that people give me my space. I will do as much as I can to make this available through interviews like this or through the website and through ultimately the documentary that will come out in a year or two. And you should know as much as I know, and good luck with it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us, time away from your family. So thanks, Jason.
Well, thanks a lot, Jason.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.
You guys are very professional. You have a wonderful website. I wish you the best in your research and helping people understand this type of activity.
Terrific. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hey, are you guys ready?
Sure. Yes.
It's going to be a little longer than an hour, and I know I said that the last time on the Shannon podcast, but this time we're not going to have technical problems because Cheryl and I did not mock the box.
That's correct.
We'll that's a good it. Thing.
That's right. That's right. So we did not mock the box. So let's go ahead and talk. First of all, when he said that he took it out today,
wow.
My first thought was, oh God, it's out.
Well, let's talk about that quickly because here's the thing. I have to admit, I had a little apprehension before this interview, and I don't know if that's just complete silliness on my part, but I did have a little apprehension.
Yeah, yeah. How about anybody else?
No, well, I was okay.
When you hear stuff like that, at first it makes you kind of wary, but then as your mind starts kicking in and you start thinking, well, you know, it's just stuff that's happened to them. It could be coincidence or, you know, maybe it won't happen to me.
Yeah, it's a creepy story. And as I read this story, before I contacted any of you about it, I have to tell you, I thought for a little bit and thought, do I really want to get involved in this? And I thought, well, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Of course.
Well, we come with just trying to understand, you know, and I think we'll be okay because we're not trying to exploit anything. We're not trying to deny its existence. We're just trying to understand just like everybody else.
Absolutely. So I would like to start off with asking you guys what you think this is. And I think I'll start with you, Chad.
I don't know enough about the Jewish faith. I mean, I've read some stuff here in the last week or two about it since, you know, I knew this interview was coming up. And it doesn't strike me. It's like JD said earlier, it doesn't strike me as being maybe a Dybbuk. Could be something else. I mean, if it's something evil associated with it, I mean, to me, it would seem like it would almost be like a demonic presence.
Yeah, definitely.
But like I said, I don't understand enough about the Jewish faith to really say for sure.
Sure. Cheryl, what do you think?
What I get from this is that the box was possibly created by someone, one or more people, to get in touch with the spirit world. And I don't understand their intentions, but I think maybe whatever their intentions were might have taken a wrong turn somewhere because there's a lot of negative events that have occurred around the owners of the box and their family members and friends. And sure, people talk about coincidence, but Jason's opinion kind of carries a lot of weight with me because of his credentials and his research on the box, and that he believes that there is something to the box being paranormal in nature and containing spirits and whatnot. I think that is maybe just that.
Sure. Well, and JD, I know that you have talked with Jason at length.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine that you are a man with an opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have an opinion. I've been thinking about this for a while now, and of course researching it myself and speaking with Jason. I don't even know where to begin here. First of all, the discrepancies that the questions I asked about, some people might be wondering what those are. Well, the first thing is we talked about the grandmother who created the box that escaped from a concentration camp, and the odds of that happening were slim to none. Very few escapes happened, and they were so few that the ones that did were recorded. It wouldn't be likely. This was during World War II when she was supposed to have migrated here from Spain, but Jason says the box wasn't created till the 60s, which is a good 20 years later or so. So I'm not thinking she bought the box with her from Europe, for one thing. However, what he does say about his family or the original owner's family possibly creating a box to contain or help one of their parted family members, that makes sense in cultures. You see cultures do this a lot, not just different religions, but other cultures. It's known as ancestor worship, where they will make sort of a shrine, not so much worship their ancestors, but they try to appease them by providing them grave goods and things like that in order to keep the spirit of that ancestor happy and not haunt them, basically. it's very conflicting on a lot of levels. If you go by the description of the Dybbuk, which was a sinner who has been sent back to redeem themselves, you wouldn't associate that attempting to get redemption with causing bad things to happen to people.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I actually have on my paper.
You know, there's a lot of different... This story goes a lot of different ways. Do I believe the box is cursed? I don't know if I believe that. There have been a lot of strange things happen around this box. What is it? Why is it? My main interest would be similar to Jason's, is who created it and why did they create it? Not so much does it contain a Dybbuk, does a spirit reside there? What was the box's purpose? It obviously has Jewish connotations and obviously could be created for some type of Jewish ceremony. But as Jason also mentioned, the Kabbalah and the study of it is very complicated. It's very ancient. It's many, many levels, many, many different practices and forms. In fact, there are certain schools in the Kabbalah that there are so many that usually people only master one through their lifetime. So what can you say about this? Like I said, it goes in so many different directions. That basically my opinion on the box. I'd have to be suspect of, first of all, its roots and people assuming that it came with a escapee from a concentration camp from Europe. That would be the first thing. It was created in the 60s, which was much later. Okay, that's the second thing. Why was it created? We have to look at what was happening in the 60s, and we don't really know where it was created or by whom. So what can we say about it? It's like in my job, finding an artifact without context or provenance. I can't tell you anything about that artifact other than what type of artifact it is in an approximate age, but I can't tell you the story about it. So That's lost, and it's really hard to do, and that's the way I view this. So,
yeah, one of the things that I found really interesting about this whole story is, and we didn't cover this with Jason, but I thought we'd talk about it now because all of us have read the story, of course, is Kristallnacht. Is that how you say it? Kristallnacht?
Night of the Broken Glass.
The Night of Broken Glass, right, which is historically the worst German pogrom against the Jews ever, I believe. According to the story, that this happened on that night, and so the family feels that they contributed to that. So to me, that means that this story is so much more serious?
I understand, but why would they wait 20 years or more to create the box?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that. I don't know.
See, that's why I'm thinking, you know, I don't know.
The box was created, it definitely was ruled out that it was created earlier than the 60s.
Well, Jason feels, by examining it, the wood used, the way it's put together, that type of thing, it was created sometime in the 60s.
Okay.
And he's the expert on antiquity. So, you know, I'm familiar with the whole Nazi thing, and that seems to be a spin of this. The whole thing, to me, reeks of urban legend. I did an article on urban legends in one of the past issues of Pug, and it really reeks of urban legend from the eBay stories, the owners, and, you know, remember what I said about a friend of a friend of a friend?
Yes.
Okay, it's the same context, and that's what I view it like that. It's reeking of an urban legend. So,
I have two things to say about that. First of all, Jason told me in one of our conversations or in some, you know, we've been corresponding back and forth about this quite a lot for the purposes of the article. And he told me that this original eBay listing from the guy Kevin in Portland, that's sort of become the template for the haunted objects that are sold on eBay. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that the very first thing I did when I read this site is I searched all of the urban legend sites because I wanted to see if anybody had said that it was an urban legend, and there's nothing. There's nothing. Now, that doesn't mean it's not an urban legend in the making, but currently there's nothing there.
Tornado sirens are going off. And
do you have a basement?
No. Slab house.
Okay. So here's the deal. We have JD who has a tornado warning. And right. So you need to step away.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
So you go, and we'll go on without you.
All right.
Well, maybe he can add something later on if he wants to.
That's right. Be safe.
Yeah.
Put stuff in. Okay.
All right. Be careful. Fine. Good luck.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Wow.
Oh, goodness. Well. That's bad. Sirens going? That means that there's a tornado.
Well, in the area. It could be.
In the area.
Wow. Yeah, did you hear the siren?
No.
Okay.
No. Did he say that, Chad? That there were sirens?
Yeah, there's sirens going on. That's what they do. They have those in Mississippi and places like that.
I hope he wasn't hearing the sirens that were going off outside my house that was the cops.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
Well, if it is, he'll be back. So.
Well, okay. Chad had a point about the myth, whole myth, whatever. So, Chad, I don't know if you want to go next.
Well, it just ties into what Karen was saying about how maybe the box was used for, you know, for divination or communication with spirits. It's just the timeline is different than what the family, they made that story up. Maybe they don't know the whole story.
Yeah. Well, like I said before, the family actually went to ground, according to Jason, as soon as they discovered that there was this attention. Yeah. And all they said is the box has been released on the world.
Okay, wait, I have that quote. And I thought, wow, that's crazy. Well, it said, okay, according to Jason, the last words from the original owners of the box were, and I quote, "The Dybbuk box has been set in motion. It will not stop ever."
My quote was not the exact quote, but it was the gist.
Yeah, that's very ominous. And I don't know. I mean, maybe, yeah, Chad, you're right. Maybe it's part myth, part reality.
Well,
the story doesn't start in, you know, it starts in 1960 and not before then.
You know? Just from my religious background, I've heard where, yeah, you can dabble in communicating with spirits, but more often than not, it actually attracts other things. And maybe through this, using this the box or whatever for this purpose, maybe they attracted something that wasn't so nice.
Yeah.
Like an evil spirit of some sort.
Jason used the phrase demonic oppression.
Yeah.
So I found that interesting.
He also, during the interview, he said something, and let me see if I can find it, because I wrote it down, that essentially he was talking about creating it with your mind, that thought creates.
Yeah.
And so how much of this do you think is belief that's coming from people reading the legend of the box? And then, here's a for instance. JD just had to get off the phone because there's a tornado warning.
Yeah.
In the middle of a podcast about this evil box. Now, if you are a person who is prone to those things, what are you going to think?
Right. It's the box.
Okay, Karen, good point, because here's something that happened to us this week. You sent me a Q&A from Jason for the magazine Paranormal Underground, the next issue.
Yep.
And I downloaded the article. It's in Microsoft Word, and I open it up, and I look at it, and I'm scratching my head because there's these boxes.
Yeah, like, you think I'm an idiot.
Throughout the entire text of the article.
Yeah.
Now, I've had Microsoft Word for, you know, many years, and I've never seen it happen before. And I asked you, Karen, do you have random boxes in your article that you sent me? And no, you didn't have them. So somehow coming over to me, we had these symbols that look like boxes throughout the entire article. I've never seen it before, ever.
Which is about a box.
Article about a demonic box. Well, not really, but sort of. So I kind of had to pause, and I think, Chad, you told me, don't go there. Don't give it any more power. Don't give it any power because maybe people do basically give it some type of power by thinking these things, you know?
Right. Well, I would ask you about this, and I should have asked you this the other night. Okay, first of all, I am on a Mac, and you're on a PC.
Right.
Although we're both using Microsoft Windows. Mm-hmm. But have we ever exchanged a Word document over that Yahoo Messenger before?
Yeah, many times.
Okay,
many times.
I didn't know if we just had always done it via email or not. Okay, so, but the other thing that happened is then you tried to send it back to me, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't come back.
No, exactly. It refused to go back to Karen.
It would not come back.
And we've never had that happen either.
Well, but since then, and this could just be a malfunction of Yahoo Messenger, since then, we have not been able to send each other documents over Yahoo Messenger.
No.
And that's the last couple of days we've tried a few times and haven't been able to. So she emailed it to me and she said, see the boxes? And I said, no.
Now, Chad is a witness to the boxes. He saw the boxes. So,
well, and earlier in the week when Cheryl and I were talking about this, I had had a really bad dream and I told Cheryl about it and she said, you have to write it down. And I said, why? Not even thinking. She said, you have to write it down. And I said, oh. The other thing is that JD's been sick.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's not been the best week ever.
No, it has not been anything catastrophic until, you know, well, he let the box loose today. Man, we're all screwed. Well,
yeah.
I've had a good week.
Yeah.
I've gotten video games and everything this week.
Isn't it your birthday tomorrow?
And a job.
I'm going to Disneyland. Yeah, I got a job.
So here's what I want to know. Are you one of those people who uses the box for evil then, Chad?
Well, actually, I'm wearing all white today, and I got my St. Michael's medal around my neck. So.
JD said he had a St. Michael's medal around his neck as well. I told him I have my karma necklace on. Well, you know, I was really torn as to whether we needed to put on that spiritual condom before we had our thing today. So I was interested that you guys brought it up, and I had no problem doing it. Yeah, I was kind of torn about that because the very rational part of me wants to say, oh, come on.
Right.
He's in Missouri. I'm in Washington. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen? But at the same time, the other part of me that tends to want to believe in things is thinking, we're safe. You know, and so I was wondering, do anybody's eyes hurt?
Nope.
Mine are a little dry, but I think it's completely psychological.
Yeah. Well, I've always been a believer that we let stuff happen to us. It's not so much that
we make our own reality.
I mean, if we don't want this to affect us, I mean, we have the power.
Yeah, because I don't believe that things happen to you really against your will. I mean, there are certain cases where things happen that are against your will. That's not exactly what I meant. But I think that we can experience things and we choose how they affect us. Right. So we can control our emotions, and our emotions control our physical selves and that type of thing. So that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Well, here's one thing that I just wanted to point out about this story is that supposedly the owners of the box and their relatives and friends have physical impairments that happen to them after they come in contact with a box via their eyes burning or having some strange sight impairment or something on their skin. They get burns or scratches or whatever.
Or that weird mucus thing he was talking about.
Yeah. Boy, ugh. I mean, that the feeling that you're drowning and whatnot, I mean, that's just some awful stuff. And he touched on the point that the wood and I believe the contents of the box were scientifically tested to rule out any type of chemical that might cause these types of problems with the eyes and the lungs and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's an important thing to note, that there were tests done on the materials.
Maybe he's allergic to something that's in the box.
Sure. I mean, there's countless possibilities. But,
maybe every person who came in contact with it is allergic to it.
Well.
That wasn't sarcasm. I'm serious.
Maybe there's something in there that affects people's eyes. And I don't know. Maybe because science doesn't know everything.
That's right. Maybe it's just 40-year-old air or 50-year-old air.
Or the dust or what have you.
Yeah, it could be.
You don't know where the box is meant.
But some other things, though, that are common regarding all the different owners, supposedly, and their family and friends are light bulbs bursting constantly, all at the same time, and just some strange things. I don't know. I mean, to me, it sounds like there's paranormal occurrences surrounding that box, if you believe what is being said.
I feel like Jason was making a distinction between that he feels that the box is not paranormal, that it's spiritual.
But isn't that the same thing?
I think it is, but some people don't. He's looked into all of the Jewish mysticism, and unfortunately, I don't know a lot about the Jewish faith, which is why I had JD helped me with the article is because he's got this tremendous background in all of this stuff. Like, I could stop him as soon as I emailed that to him. He was really excited about this. I'm really bummed that he had to go, and I hope he's okay.
There's definitely spiritual and religious aspects of this story, and I like you, Karen, am not versed enough on the religious texts or background, so I can't speak like Chad and David can about the subject. But when I asked Jason if he believed the box contained magical or paranormal powers, he said yes.
I find Jason very credible because of his background and because I've talked with him. The one thing that really puts his credibility over the top with me is the discussion at the end. That's why I asked that very last question, what are you going to do with the box?
Right.
I think his answer sort of shows a little bit of credibility. You know, once he doesn't necessarily want his son to have it. He wants to be buried with it, but that type of thing. To me, that sort of added to his credibility.
Well, that right. He's going the extra mile of making a documentary about it, telling what he thinks is the true story of it, whereas he knows Hollywood's going to Hollywoodize it.
Fictionalize it, yeah, and it's going to become
just like they did
something
with,
maybe that it's not
haunting in Connecticut. I mean, they're going to take it and they're going to turn it and twist it until they get the story they want that they think people will pay money to see.
Oh yeah, when he was telling me about the movie, and I believe the director is Sam Raimi.
Yep.
Yeah, and so when he was telling me about the movie, the first thing that I thought was, because I'd just seen Haunting in Connecticut, was Haunting in Connecticut. So, well, but you know what? I'll go see the movie.
Well, when I heard Sam Raimi in regards to the box, I thought Evil Dead, which was his first movie ever put out. And so he has some background in horror movies. You know, he's not just the director of Spider-Man.
He did Spider-Man. Okay, yeah.
And Xena. He was involved in Xena.
You mean the TV show Xena Warriors?
Yeah.
I love that show.
And his brother has always been in every movie or show he's produced.
Oh, really? Well, so here's something that I thought was really interesting. I stumbled across this, and I wish I could remember the website that I found it on. It just on a forum, like I was saying. And so it took me a little bit to pull up Jason and to find him, because he doesn't want to be contacted, and so he makes it kind of hard, which is fine. I have no problem with that. As a matter of fact, I actually apologized to him afterwards for contacting him, and he said, no, this is okay.
Oh, good. Okay.
So, yeah, because I felt badly about it, but...
Well, he's not seeking attention. He's not...
He isn't.
Are we the first interview that Jason's
That's
given
what I was
quite
going
a few
to say.
Years?
Okay.
I'm in tune with you, Karen.
You are. That's because we don't mock the box.
That's right.
So, yes. So, anyway, when I finally found him and contacted him, he told me that he's been under contract with the movie. I'm not sure. I wasn't clear whether it was with Sam Raimi or whether it was with the documentary people.
Okay.
But for like 4 or 5 years, they've been trying to get this movie made, and he's been under contract where he hasn't been giving any interviews. He hasn't been giving any podcasts. He hasn't been able to do any of that. And I think we might be the first ones. Yeah.
Wow.
The timing of that was awfully good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad he decided to share his knowledge with us, because I think it's an interesting story.
Oh, yeah. I love the story. I think it's a great story, but I have a thing for urban legends.
Yeah.
I have books of urban legends, and I go on urban legends. I love urban legends. I think urban legends are just cool. They say a lot about us as a culture.
Right.
And so I've always really been fascinated. And so, like I say, when I came across this, the first thing that I thought was urban legend, and I looked everywhere to see if it was. Final thoughts, Cheryl.
I have a final thought, and that is that we experienced no technical difficulties this week on our podcast, which I'm grateful for. But JD did get called away because there was tornado sirens going off. So that happened.
Chad, do you have a final thought?
Well, goes to show that there's stuff out there we don't understand, and it just maybe we'll never understand.
I'm putting this one in the column of unsolved mysteries.
So,
I agree.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Well, great. Thanks. Another good podcast.
Okay.
Thank you.
Been interesting.
Thank you.
It was fun.
If you'd like to be a panelist on Paranormal Underground Presents or have a guest or topic suggestion, please email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Thank you for joining us.